Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Parenting is Easy podcast, where we will discuss the pleasures and the frustrations, the good and the bad, and the rewarding and the troubling aspects of parenting. I am your host, Hananya Abraham, and I'm a psychotherapist that specializes in working with teenagers, young adults, and parents with a specific niche in assisting with communication within the family dynamics. While everyone has their own unique journey and experiences as a parent and as a child, there are many common affiliations and attributes that we can all relate to and share. Together, we will learn from personal stories and experiences from parents across many different backgrounds, cultures, and communities. So get comfortable, grab your glass of coffee, and let's get right into the interview.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Parenting is Easy, said no one ever. Today, I have a guest that is going to delve into a topic that we have yet to discuss here on the podcast, but yet one that is so prevalent for all expecting mothers and new mothers and maybe even seasoned mothers. But this is a topic, breastfeeding and lactating, that I think can really resonate with a lot of people. My guest today is Amy Tanzillo, who is a breastfeeding expert who helps expectant and new moms feel knowledgeable and empowered during the early months of breastfeeding. For well over a decade, she has worked with thousands of clients through her lactation support package. So moms, a start of motherhood with a level of calm and confidence to best nurture their baby. We will post the social media and the website in the show notes. But without further ado, Amy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, good morning. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
Thanks for coming. This is a topic that may not be relevant to me right now, but I think it's one where many people that are either in the process of either becoming parents or maybe they've already started and they're contemplating whether they should or shouldn't be breastfeeding their baby. With your experience, and you've been doing this for a long time, I'm curious just to delve right into it over here. What are the first things when someone contacts you that you're, and you hear the questions or maybe the anxiety that comes up with the concept of breastfeeding, what are the first things that you talk to them about?
I think one of the biggest challenges of breastfeeding is not knowing how much your baby is getting to eat, especially my clientele is a little bit older, more established moms in their career. And with that comes, I think, a level of anxiety.
Sure. When you say older, what do you mean by that?
I think maybe my generation, parents were more in their 20s. This demographic in Washington, D.C., at least lots of moms are closer to 35, even beyond. So there's just a different age than there used to be. Maybe that's not even to this area, but probably nationwide, moms are waiting to have babies.
Okay. And does that change the process of whether it's contemplation or how they would go about preparation for starting to breastfeed their baby?
I think it does. Like from a psychological standpoint, once you're into your mid-30s, on average, moms are just more anxious. They want to have a lot more control. They're a lot more knowledgeable in terms of maybe just winging it in your 20s, maybe like our parents did. But with age comes just, and I think it goes hand in hand with the careers as well that most of my moms have. They're just used to things kind of going as planned. They have an Excel spreadsheet for everything. And when you have this new baby and something that's such an uncharted waters for them, like breastfeeding, it could bring on a lot of anxiety. Mm. And then to answer your question, one of the things that I'm often asked in the beginning is, how much is this baby getting to eat? How do I know that they're getting enough to eat for me when I can't see it or I can't have some type of data behind it? So I think that that takes a big adjustment with just kind of going with it and looking at the big picture instead of just having complete control over every little aspect.
Right. That makes sense. So what I'm hearing you say is, for the most part, one of the most important things when it comes to a parent preparing to start to breastfeed is their own personal anxieties that they're going through. And that has to be something that has to be at the forefront. And I think as parents, we're constantly thinking about, okay, what can I do for my kid? What can I do for my kid? Did I woke up 2 o'clock in the morning? Okay, what can I do? What can I do? And that's about what can I do? Meaning sort of the way I talk about it, at least in my therapy room, is making a U-turn, actually making a U-turn and bringing it back into self. And that is a very, very big part what you're saying regarding what breastfeeding is. What can a person do? And what are the things that they can sort of work on to help bring down the level of anxiety, both personally, but also regarding what you were just saying to your second point of towards the child, is my child getting enough from me? What are the things that a parent can do for that?
I think one of the number one things that you can do to make your breastfeeding journey go as smooth as possible is to try to get your support lined up before the baby arrives. Most of my clients, they ask, like, what are they asking when they reach out? Well, most of them are booking with me 3 months, 4 months before their due date. So I'm really in the wings there for when the baby arrives. And that support really starts immediately up through delivery, because I think it's worse now than ever that there's so many different places to go for resources. Instagram is just loaded with feeds that this is how much milk you should be making, and this is
social media in general.
Yes, social media in general, as well as a colleague at work or a relative or a well-meaning mother-in-law, and you're getting all this information. And I always say that it's just so much more beneficial to have one quarterback or one designated expert that you can go to for questions, not only leading up to birth, but even while you're in the hospital. You may have a young nurse that comes in and just is trying to be supportive, but suggests that you use formula right from the get-go, and then you're supplementing unnecessarily. So it's nice to have that resource in your back pocket, literally on speed dial, to say, what are your thoughts on this? And then I would ask things like, is there a sugar imbalance? Was this ordered by a physician? Did baby lose too much weight? Why are they asking for you to go down this road?
Is there a way for moms to tell how much milk the baby's actually getting? I know this was something, at least for my oldest son, where there was a point where he was losing weight, and it took almost 5-6 days to realize that just my wife wasn't producing milk. Is there some sort of test or something that can be done at home without going to a doctor that parents can look out for?
Yes, there's two answers to that. If you have the lactation consultant lined up and I come to your home, I bring a hospital grade scale, and we do something that's called a test weigh, where we would weigh your baby, and then we go through a whole feed and have them nurse and then weigh the baby again. And we can tell exactly how much is transferred from mom to baby. We could see, was it a 1/2 ounce where that may have not been enough for your son, or 2.5 ounces where you get the reassurance that everything's okay. But then for the day in, day out, ideally you wouldn't have a scale there, and you're not doing test weighs at every feed. So there's context clues. A newborn baby from day 6 and on should have 6 to 8 wet diapers and 3 stools. They should be sleeping well, but not really lethargic. Or the other end of that is they shouldn't not stop crying. They should have this appearance like they're drunk after nursing and be satiated. So there are those types of context clues where you can tell the baby is getting enough. And even without a lactation consultant, you are going to the pediatrician pretty frequently in the beginning. So they are keeping close tabs on the weight, and the weight doesn't lie. We want baby back up to birth weight by day 14 and then gaining an ounce from there.
Got it. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. What role do other people in the house play when it comes to this, whether it's partner, husband, kids? And how does mom balance making sure that the infant is getting what they need, but yet at the same time taking care of her own needs as mom, and then other people in the house? What's that balance?
I think that's a great question. And a lot of times moms are looking to maybe introduce a bottle sooner than later because they want dad or partner to be involved. So that's the most instrumental role in this mom-baby dyad right at first, is what role the partner plays. And there are so many more things that a partner or extended family member can do besides just feeding the baby. When you have a newborn baby, they need attending to before and after the feed. They need their diaper changed before they start feeding. And then when they're done going to the breast, they need to be burped and put their clothes back on and swaddle them and soothe them. So there's these kind of like bookend tasks that other people can do that don't necessarily actually feeding the baby. And then there's just the household chores, which other family members, it's just instrumental in having mom to get rest and recovery of doing things like the cooking and cleaning. And it's interesting because, again, where I live, there's just not the extended family network. It's interesting to see that there are resources that people put in place to kind of help fill those gaps, because you really are in the trenches.
Where can people find resources? Like, where would they even start to look? The phrase I like using is, sometimes I don't even know what it is that I don't know. Where can people start looking for something like that?
So in terms of caring for mom, there's something that's called a postpartum doula that can do a lot of those things to really help care for mom. The focus is really on making sure that mom is resting and well-fed and helping with any type of healing that is required. And any type of postpartum resource need, like lactation consultant or a night nurse, we all have these fantastic resources in our back pockets. So like I would be able to refer a postpartum doula. Otherwise, it's other moms groups. I would recommend getting from the get-go, even before the baby arrives, in these Facebook groups that really ties you into other moms in the community, because they really are your best resource to tap into other people that can help you.
It's amazing. I think community in so many ways, and starting it from so young, and we've had other discussions, and I've talked about that here in this podcast regarding the concept of community and how important that can be in child rearing in general, and to see how it starts at such a... It could even start in utero for it being something that could be so helpful. And I'm so glad you said that. And it goes in line as well as you're saying, you know, to contact you or a doula 2-3 months before. And it's a concept we talked about. This comes from DBT therapy, dialectical behavioral therapy, called coping ahead and preparing. Any good parent, any good athlete, or anyone giving a speech is always preparing beforehand. And when it comes to breastfeeding, it is no different. But at the same time, there are things that can come and cause a hiccup in the road, which in a way is normal and I think to be expected in a certain way. Just to finish off on this area we're talking about regarding the mental health and the anxieties aspects of things, I'm curious, a lot of people nowadays are taking medications, not just over-the-counter stuff, but prescriptions, whether it's for their anxieties, depression, or something else that they're dealing with, either psychologically or even physically. I'm curious, how can a person find out more information regarding what it is that they're taking and of how that's going to affect their breastfeeding?
The most obvious answer you would think would be their doctor or the psychiatrist, but a lot of times there's just like breastfeeding and taking medication really isn't on the tip of a psychiatrist's tongue or know-how. So I actually own a book, kind of the godfather of medications and breastfeeding. His name is Dr. Thomas Hale, and I have the book in my library, and you can look up what a mom is taking. I just had a mom ask me about a muscle relaxer she threw out her back, and she was nursing her 6-month-old baby, and I was able to look it up. And Dr. Hale has a drug categorized by levels. It's a level 1, it's absolutely harmless. A level 2, take with caution. Level 3, maybe the drug has some negative side effects, but you weigh out with your doctor if the benefits outweigh the negative side effects. And then 4 and 5, there's caution there, or it's counterindicated with breastfeeding. So there is that resource there. It's a little bit of an investment for a book. Not every mom, I think, needs to own it. But if you were to reach out to a lactation consultant, most of us have it in their library.
Okay. Now, on that note, how about when it comes to diet and foods that moms should be eating or maybe shouldn't be eating? What would be recommendations? It doesn't have to be like, oh, these are the biggest no-nos or these are the best things. It's more like, in general, I think when a person is looking to have a healthy diet, it's about having a healthy balance. Yes. So what would be that balance regarding the do's and the don'ts when it comes to diet and breastfeeding?
So the motto is to not do anything that makes breastfeeding a real drag or something that you're not going to want to do for the long haul. So the general recommendation is you really don't need to avoid anything. Obviously, drugs and alcohol, but in terms of food, unless someone in your immediate family has a peanut allergy, there's really nothing that you have to avoid. Again, this should be something that's part of your lifestyle and not all these restrictions and rules that makes it something difficult to do. There has been some studies loosely based that some type of oats and wheat and barley and those types of things could help increase milk supply. But really, when it comes down to it, you eat to hunger, you drink to thirst. And if you want to make more milk, you move milk to make milk. So you're really, in my belief, not going to take a lactation cookie and immediately increase your supply where you didn't have enough milk. And then the next day you will. I think that there's like excellent marketing around those things and they probably taste good and they don't hurt. But you really need to be moving milk to make more milk. So your best bet would be breastfeeding more or implementing a pumping plan.
Okay, it's a perfect segue over there. So pumping plan, what are the, I guess you could say, the do's and don'ts when it comes to, and there are even situations where moms are only pumping and they're feeding their mom that as well. So are there certain things that I think are important for newbie parents to be thinking about or to know about when it comes to pumping in general and continuing on where you just left off regarding the moving milk?
Yes. So in terms of the pump, you need a quality pump. All insurance companies cover a pump of some sort, but it varies in terms of the quality and which pump that they provide.
What do you mean by quality pump? What's the difference?
The most two popular ones are the Spectra pump. These are personal pumps, and the Medela, either Freestyle or Pump and Style, they are quality pumps. but not to really mention a brand off name, but there are lower quality ones that are a lot less expensive that different policies or different carriers say, okay, this is the pump that we're going to provide you. And if you're really looking to maintain your supply, it's not one that's recommended. Sure, you can throw it in your car as a backup and in a pinch to use it. But for day in, day out for your pumping, you want a quality pump.
Why is that?
Well, it has to effectively move that milk. So if it's not working up to snuff and it's inefficient, and especially if you're exclusively pumping, you need something that's going to pull as much, if not more, than the baby would have. And if there's something in a low supply situation, you'd actually want a hospital grade pump. These are industrial strength. They have two motors. Maybe your personal pump averages cost around $250. These pumps retail for $2,000. You rent them from the hospital. They're industrial. They're the most efficient in terms of pulling milk from mom.
That's probably not what the norm is going to be for people listening to this.
Well, you would be surprised. And again, I think a lot of it has to do with the age of my mamas.
Okay.
If you get a mom who's closer to 40, in most cases, she may have to do a little extra work to boost that supply. Again, it's just very, very different than having a baby at 28. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with it, other than I think you need to be aware of the implications that it could have on what it would take to ramp up your supply. If that's the case, you do want to bring in. And they're very accessible. I mean, that's the cost for retail to buy it, but I rent them on a monthly basis. So I have them there available, so they're not that difficult to get a hold of. And then lots of moms will ask me, when do I start pumping? And the question is, it depends. Like if you were in the hospital and baby has lost too much weight and it's shown that baby's not transferring milk from mom, we want to start pumping from the get-go to have that milk get out of mom and then into the baby another way, typically by bottle. If breastfeeding is going well and baby is gaining well, the recommendation is to hold off on pumping until breastfeeding is well established and that baby has a great latch, so you're not introducing bottles too soon. But it's just a case-by-case scenario. The recommendation is to hold off on pumping, but if you had a mom who had a C-section, maybe had some type of traumatic birth, had lost blood during delivery and really needs rest, then maybe you're pulling in dad with the bottles a lot sooner than the 4-week mark. And I think that it's important to look at the whole picture and see what's not only best for the baby, but also mom and dad and the whole family unit.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And going back to what you were just saying regarding being in the hospital and starting it then, could you talk a little bit about what happens to mom the first few days? And is there different nutrients or is there a different formula that is in mom that is for the first couple of days when she's feeding the infant as opposed mm-hmm. to, let's say, week 1, 2, or 3?
You always hear like when my milk is coming in. It takes the average time is day 3 for a vaginal birth for your milk to come in. C-section, it's day 5 for your milk to come in. But there's actually colostrum that's existing there. Many moms can actually hand express before the baby is even here and see that there are little drops of milk, or technically called colostrum, in those early days. You don't necessarily even have to do anything for your milk to come in. Your milk is going to actually start producing and become copious just from delivering the placenta, meaning it's an automatic thing that happens. And then as baby latches in that first 24, 48 hours, and they're nursing often, and that's why those first few days are so hard, because they're nursing all the time and so frequently, they're actually sending the message to the brain to get that milk to come into a copious amount. It's there and it's coming.
Wow. It's fascinating. You don't even think of it that way, where baby needs to eat every hour, 2 or 3, whatever it is that they're needing. And really, a part of that whole cycle is also the fact that the brain getting trained to send more milk into the situation, which is fascinating. And I think sometimes also there could be a uncomfortability, at least in the beginning, when mom is starting to breastfeed. What can you say regarding what mom can expect, and also what can she do in situations where they're feeling uncomfort?
That's a great question. So one of my biggest mottos is breastfeeding should not hurt. You shouldn't have cracked or bleeding nipples, which I'm called about all the time. And that really comes down to where mom's nipple is landing in the baby's mouth. So if the nipple lands right behind the two front teeth, you can feel, if you were to put your tongue behind your two front teeth, there feels like ridges. And that's the hard palate. And when that baby's tongue comes up and squeezes there, that's where that pain comes from. And that tissue damage happens very, very quickly. Our goal is to have the nipple land in the back of the baby's mouth at the juncture of the hard and soft palate. rule number one, breastfeeding should not hurt. It does not take you time to get used to it or for things to toughen up so it's more comfortable. If you're having pain, excruciating pain right from the get-go, by all means, get a breastfeeding expert to help you. Another thing that can be uncomfortable is something that's called engorgement, where when your milk initially comes in and it's kind of an overdrive there and it's beyond what the baby needs and they're either just not taking that very much initially or inefficient or they're separated from you, whatever reason, then you can get an oversupply or your milk going into overdrive, which would be very, very uncomfortable. And that's when you can make yourself susceptible to a breast infection or something that's called mastitis that you would want to avoid.
Okay. It's fascinating to think that there's just a half an inch, if not less than that, of area of where the nipple is going into the infant's mouth and the difference that can make. But that's the difference of waking up and saying, yeah, let's continue doing this. Or it's like, nope, this is not for me. Let me just go to the bottles.
I'm done.
Or maybe just wanting to pump constantly. Is there a connection with different things that are happening to what you were just saying and what can come about if there is any sort of a pain to the mom to tongue tie and lip tie? And can you explain a little bit about what that is?
Yes. So the two things that a tongue tie or lip tie can impact in breastfeeding is the baby's ability to transfer milk and or the ability for the latch to be pain-free. A tongue or lip tie is when the frenulum, and under the tongue, you can see that little piece of tissue there. If it's too tight and the tongue doesn't have mobility, there's two things that can happen that obviously will impact breastfeeding. One, the tongue doesn't have this wave-like motion to pull the milk from mom to baby.
So they're not swallowing properly. Got it.
Correct. Yes. They're not able to actually get the milk. And then the other thing, if that tongue is not able to come forward and protect the mom from the gum line there, then that can cause tremendous pain. And even though the latch looks great and it looks like it's on really deep and everything looks like the latch is okay, if no matter what the mom's experiencing pain, the tongue tie could be the culprit. And then the frenulum is similar on the top. You can see the frenulum here. I don't even think I barely have one, but if that's really tight.
Yeah, the little piece that's connecting the mouth to the lip.
Yes. If it's really tight or meaty, it can cause those problems as well. And if I suspect that and see that, then I would refer mom to a specialist, either a pediatric dentist or an ENT.
Wow. And are there signs that moms on their own that don't have a specialist that they can sort of look out for in both themselves and in their infant that can lead them to go find the right people that are needed?
Yes. So you can see it. You can see the frenulum and you can tell that it's too tight if baby's not able to stick his tongue out. So if they're not able to actually bring the tongue forward all the way out of the mouth, that frenulum has a tight hold there. Sometimes you'll see a heart shape of the tongue. So if that frenulum is pulling back in the middle, the normal sized tongue would be kind of just rounded, and it'll have a heart shape if that frenulum is pulling too tight on the tongue. And then also, baby's not gaining well despite nursing and despite mom having a great supply, or no matter what, it hurts. Then those would be two reasons to kind of go down the road to look if there's anything anatomically going on. And I always say that to give it a week, that you don't want to ever do anything unnecessarily to your baby. So sometimes if I suspect a tongue or lip tie, I have a client like this right now where I left the hospital grade scale for them to do test weighs, and they could do before and after weighs as they're feeding to see, does that baby ever pull what they need? If that baby needs 2 ounces, does he ever get close to it, even 1.5, 1.8, or is he nursing well, vigorously at the breast for 30 minutes, but then has a very dinky transfer like 0.2 or 0.5. That's probably a sign that something is going on.
And how can you tell if it's going on within mom regarding milk and regarding how she's doing or when it's regarding the baby?
So with mom, typically you would see that the nipple is kind of disfigured when baby comes off. You'll either see a crease or a line because that baby, again, is not able to bring that tongue forward to protect the nipple from the gum line. Sometimes it looks like a fresh tube of lipstick that's kind of has a slanted crease there. If mom is exclusively nursing, but baby's not pulling the milk from mom because of a tongue or lip tie, you'll see baby's weight either lose weight or not
efficiently
gain weight. And then mom's supply as a result will decrease. someone, the baby or something, a pump needs to be consistently moving milk for you, from you, to maintain your supply. And if the baby's not doing the job because of something anatomically, and you're not pumping to kind of replace the baby, then your supply will decrease. So then you have a mom with a low supply and a baby who has low weight gain or slow weight gain.
When you say frequently, is there like a time on that regarding when mom should be knowing what to be doing with the milk that she has stored inside of her?
Yes. So in the first 2 weeks, you don't want a baby to go longer than 3 hours is kind of the golden rule. So you're bringing baby to breast every 2.5 to 3 hours. You're aiming for at least 8 feedings a day. You'll see that typically with newborns, they sleep really well during the early morning and noon, kind of like this time of the day. And then they'll get choppier during our dinner time when the sun is going down. They're more fussy and harder to satiate and soothe. They want to nurse more frequently. And then they're really eating on a more frequent basis on that cycle of consistency overnight. And that's why newbornhood, I would say the first 6 weeks, is so tricky, because they're really more alive and awake and wanting to eat more frequently at night.
Wow, fascinating. And to think, though, the constant correlations that you have between what the baby's going through or what mom's going through, and something that you were talking about now, just in the fact of that technically this baby should be knowing what it is that they should be doing. And they have so much muscle memory and so much knowledge of the concept of sucking in the first place is absolutely fascinating and magical in so many ways for how this whole process of child rearing actually starts. When it comes to a child that's not able to have the proper technique, what can a parent do to A, help out with that? And B, maybe at what point would they bring in a specialist?
Again, I think the best scenario is to have your specialist, in terms of a lactation consultant, you don't need to pre-book an ENT or a pediatric dentist. But if you have your lactation consultant prior, for my package, for example, I'm coming to your home the first month on a weekly basis. So if you have your baby today, maybe our first visit when you get home from the hospital is Friday. And every Friday in September, I'm coming to your home and we're looking at latch and positioning. Is baby gaining weight? How much are they pulling from mom? It really avoids these issues becoming real problems. But what are red flags that mom needs to get someone in the house if they didn't pre-book a lactation consultant? You go to the pediatrician and baby's not gaining weight, or they've lost initially more than 10% of their weight loss. We expect babies to lose weight. It's normal to go up to 10%, but if babies are losing 12%, 15% and not then climbing, then that's an indication to bring in someone. Cracked or bleeding nipples, pain. Or sometimes it's mom's just feeling overwhelmed and they just want to check of, is this going okay? Mm-hmm. And you're kind of going in there and you're checking weight and checking latch and positioning and giving them the proof from the scale that baby's getting enough to eat. And it's just really a peace of mind. It never hurts, though, if you are planning to breastfeed, to at least have an initial visit, because there's something that you're going to want either support on or answered or some uncertainty. So it's just kind of doing yourself a favor as you're lining up your night nurse or your meal plan or who's going to walk the dog. I would look at a lactation consultant as well.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. And continue on that. I guess you already started answering the question, but how can moms or parents in general be more proactive when it comes to making sure that this whole process goes as smooth as possible, both for the infant and also for mom?
And that's it, is getting help before the baby arrives. Not a week out when you're stressed and you're overwhelmed and you're trying to Google to see who is in your area and who does home visits and who's available. There's not a ton of lactation consultants. There's maybe breastfeeding counselors or CLC, but if you're looking for the gold standard, the title is actually called an IBCLC, or an International Board Certified Lactation Consultant, which it's a very vigorous certification to get. For example, I had to do 500 hours shadowing a lactation consultant at our local hospital. You have to take a board exam that's only offered one time a year, and it's kind of like an SAT, right? A 5-hour test that you go to a testing center for. So you want to look for that stamp of approval in terms of breastfeeding expert truly being an expert. And it's hard to find when you're sleep deprived and you're weak out and you might not feel that great. I mean, there's some recovery that has to take place for a mom, no matter if she had a vaginal birth or a C-section. And trying to find that and take care of the baby and feed the baby, and everybody's kind of stressed out and overwhelmed, it's a harder thing to do.
Do you ever have situations where you would recommend to mom that maybe it's time for you to stop trying to feed your baby and either switch to the pump or maybe start going on to formula?
Yes, I've had it. I probably have supported thousands and thousands of moms. I've been doing this for 14 years and only like less than five come to mind. So it's not a very frequent thing. Most moms can breastfeed and most moms have milk or some milk to do it part of the way. But I can remember one, and she was almost asking me for permission. So you're also picking up on just the cues there of what's going on with mom emotionally, but she didn't even really like it. And she was fine with having help and having the help giving the bottle. And I could just feel that she was asking me to tell her that it was okay to wean. And it was really stressing her out. And she kind of made it clear that she really didn't want to do it. And I said, you know what? You don't necessarily have to breastfeed. And I'm saying this without judgment. I used formula. I did my lactation training after I had my three children. So I used it because I wasn't educated. And in some situations, it's just unnecessary in terms of if you have an adequate supply and then you're using it just to use it. Breast milk is superior to formula. And not that there's not a time and place for it, but research, science says that it's the best nutrition for the baby. But there's also different components, emotional, or if mom has to go back on a medication for her quality of life and it's not compatible with breastfeeding. Again, it's important to look at the whole situation to see what's going to work best for this family. And sometimes that means not breastfeeding.
That makes a lot of sense. As I wrap it up over here, the other question that comes to mind over here is regarding allergies. We touched on it before regarding the peanuts and stuff, but I'm curious, can that be something that could be picked up in the infant? If let's say mom is eating something, let's say, for example, a peanut butter sandwich, or let's say soy.
Yes.
And what are the signs that can come up within the infant themselves? And what are the steps that mom should be doing or not doing from their point?
And it's a tricky thing to deal with. And my heart goes out to any mom dealing with an allergy because it takes a lot of work. The most common is a dairy allergy. Mm-hmm. And you would be surprised how it is in everything. It's not just your glass of milk or yogurt or ice cream. The way that it would show up in baby is projectile vomit, a rash, blood in the stool, or mucousy stools that aren't normal. Those are things that you would bring to your pediatrician's or lactation consultant's attention about a possible allergy. And really the thing that's recommended, which again, I think is really tricky for moms, is doing an elimination diet where you would get all dairy out of your diet and then see if things improve. It's hard to do. And it's hard to do if you're doing it hardcore and you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize that had milk in it.
Especially dairy. I'm saying, you think about all the moms that are looking forward to their tub of ice cream after baby's down and after dinner. And now like they're told no, like you have to stop that. That's really hard. That's really, really hard. Is there any truth to the concept of, I know there in other countries have had situations where little kids are less likely to have, let's say, a peanut allergy because they start giving to them at a very, very young age. And I'm curious how that would work, let's say, regarding breastfeeding and sort of putting certain things in to mom's body that can help start planting the seeds. As someone that has taken allergy shots, I'm learning that what allergy shots really are is the thing that I'm allergic to. It's putting it into my body.
Yeah.
So it was pretty cool to now have certain things in me that I always had a problem with. So I'm curious, when it comes to infancy, how does that work? And is that something that you would recommend in some way, shape, or form?
The answer is, in short, not really in the breastfeeding stage. You should eat what you want and not restrict anything, or you don't necessarily have to introduce anything and to prepare your baby to either having an allergy or not having an allergy. Again, if your sibling has a peanut allergy, which can be very, very dangerous.
The sibling, you're saying to the infant?
Yes, or even mom or dad.
Okay.
Immediate family unit. If anybody in that immediate family unit has a peanut allergy, you may want to avoid eating peanuts while you're breastfeeding. But with other foods, that really kind of testing and being proactive comes when they start solids. And exclusively, or a breastfed baby, really even formula as well, really doesn't need solids until they're 6 months old. It's kind of old school to start them at 4 months and to start with the rice cereal, which we found really has no nutritional value there. And that's when you can kind of get into the testing and to see if they have a reaction to anything.
That makes sense. A lot of sense. I feel like after we finish it, I'm going to have to listen to this again just to write down a lot of notes, just because I feel like there's so much information that I was able to learn today. I'm curious if there are questions that are usually asked to you or you would usually talk about that we haven't mentioned here today.
Just a final note, I guess, would be that breastfeeding is a marathon. It isn't something that ideally the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends that you breastfeed for a year. I think that it's something that should be taken on as a marathon. If you had to supplement in the first week, or you had a baby lose too much weight, or your supply looked to be inefficient, it doesn't have to be this black or white thing where it's all or nothing. There's something that's called dose benefit. Even if you make some of the baby's milk or 30% of the baby's milk, there's still a lot of benefits, not only for the nutrition, but bonding with mom, the antibodies. So I think it's a really good idea to just keep kind of an open mind how it's going to go. And no matter what you see on social media or a friend who had the whole freezer stocked with breast milk, that's not your story. And it can look very differently than what you may see in other places. And that's okay.
That's my catchphrase over there. Okay. Well, as we sort of wrap it up over here, I'm curious if you can share with us a funny, embarrassing, or hysterical story that happened to you as a parent of three.
Gosh, this would be before motherhood. When I was in high school, I went to a Catholic high school and wore a uniform. And I was new to wearing a uniform. I transferred from a public school. And at that time, we wore boxer shorts under our little pleated skirts. And I'll age myself. I had Rick Tockett from the Philadelphia Flyers boxer shorts on. And my skirt got caught up in my boxers after using the ladies' room. And I'm new at this school, and I'm walking down the hall, and I was so embarrassed because Sister Mary had to pull me aside and tell me to get my skirt out of my men's underwear.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Oh, my God. So I could see you being the mom that's standing by the front door as your kids are leaving to school, making sure that that's not happening.
Yes.
Anyway, okay. You mentioned one book from Thomas Hale, and we'll try to find a link for that and post it in the description just for people for their references or to reach out to lactate professionals and coaches just to get more information. But is there a book that you would recommend to parents that can help them on this journey, or maybe a book that's helped you in your parenting?
That's a great question. And maybe it's not exactly related to breastfeeding, but when we talked about introducing solids and kind of some of the things that you would heard that maybe our parents done that are just really outdated, there is a book called, I think it's called Baby Superfood. It's by Ruth Yaron, Y-A-R-O-N. And it talks about how to introduce solids, and you start with avocado and how to do one food at a time. And I really used that as my go-to when my kids were starting solids, and it's well written. She's very educated, and I think that that would be a great book to have in your parenthood library.
Super Baby Food, and they actually have a cookbook as well.
Oh, so great. There we go.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you for that. My last question for you today, if you can think of a everyday mundane superpower you can have that would help your parenting, what would that be?
Just know that moms can do anything. I think it's just being aware that moms can do anything.
So you're saying confidence?
Yes.
Okay.
And even though every day may not look ideal or perfect, that at the end of the day, you're that baby's world or that child's world, and they don't maybe see you as flawed as you being so hard on yourself. So just keep up that confidence, because you really are a beacon for those little kids.
Okay.
Even when you're not feeling like it.
Got it. I love it. I love it. It's a super mom of confidence. Well, Amy, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so, so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Hey again. I hope you were able to learn as much as I did today. Thank you so much for staying to the end and listening to the entire interview. Please feel free to leave a comment wherever you listen to this podcast. All comments will be read weekly, and we appreciate all feedback and ideas. If you have an idea for a guest or a specific topic, please feel free to share. Additionally, you can contact us at parentingiseasypodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's parentingiseasypodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for joining today. And remember, parenting is a journey. Don't forget to enjoy it. The goal is to be a little better today than yesterday, and hopefully better tomorrow than we were today.